All right, welcome back. This is our Purity Podcast from castamonia.org. This is podcast number 12, and I just appreciate everybody that's listening. My name is Doug, and I am a grateful believer in Jesus Christ, and I'm a recovering sex addict.
Hey, Doug.
And I am here again with George.
My name is George. I love Jesus, and I'm fighting for sexual purity.
Hey, George, and welcome back. We missed you on our last podcast as we were kind of walking through the dangers of pornography.
I thought I got fired.
You're back on. Rehired.
Nice. At half the rate.
And today we wanted to really discuss the power of lies and what role lying has in addiction. And then also then to contrast that with the power of truth and then how truth can become a part of our healing and our recovery. Next week in our podcast, I'm excited that we're going to be talking with Stephen Kabler, who is one of our Houston area polygraphers, and a lot of us that are in sex addiction therapy, we go see a polygrapher at certain stages throughout our recovery. I go every 3 months to make sure that, you know, what I'm saying, the way I'm living is truly up to snuff. And so, you know, so to speak. And so we're excited to have him on next week to kind of talk about his role in the healing of sex addicts specifically.
So the topic's going to be how to beat the polygraph?
The topic will not be how to beat the polygraph.
That's going to be terrible.
Yeah. So he will
But he might get a lot of hits.
It might. Yes. It might. He will tell us how to pass the polygraph, okay. But I am sure it's
just
by
being honest.
Telling the truth.
That's right. Yeah.
One of the things that struck me, I guess, in starting to do some research on this podcast topic was just how quickly in the Bible this became an issue. So we're looking at Genesis 3:4 already, where the serpent is telling Eve, hey, you're not going to die if you eat this apple. And so whether you're a believer in the Bible or whether you're not, you know that story. You know that is something that's there where the devil tempted us. And gave us something that he said, hey, that's not going to do that. And he's the father of lies. So Everything out of his lips is a lie. And, you know, I know personally for me, I've fallen for a lot of those.
Yep.
And so we really want to talk about how does lying become a part of a person's addiction?
Well, you know, for me, it really had to do with, it's really for any kid. I mean, there's an awesome, awesome article out there, and I posted it to castamonia.org. Called the Amazing Lie-O-Matic, that, you know, children learn.
The Amazing Lie-O-Matic.
The Amazing Lie-O-Matic. And so basically, and if I could surmise the 2 pages, it's we learn to lie to protect ourselves from negative feedback, and it's automatic. It's like instant. And a good example is early on in recovery, you know, I'm supposed to be rigorous honest. And my wife asked me, did you stir the beans? Yes. Only because I knew I hadn't done it, but it was instant.
Right.
I just didn't want to hear her, you know, get upset or anything. I didn't want to upset my wife. And I was, yes, I stirred the beans. No, they're sitting there burning. The bottoms are burning. They were black beans, so it was fine, I guess. But yeah, that's the Amazing Lie-O-Matic that, you know, I grew up, or most of us grew up in a household where if we told the truth about something, we were quickly shut down, whether it's like, oh, that guy's so fat, or why is that guy, you can't say that.
Right, where honesty was actually put down.
Exactly. It was not a good thing to be honest. And that's one of the things, another side note, I try to stress to my kids, be honest, you know. Chances are you won't get in trouble if you're honest. Just be honest with me.
Right. And I remember the article talks about that basically caregivers send a lot of junk. And that's what he said in the article to people when they tell the truth, that you get negative consequences when you tell the truth. So, man, it's a lot easier to lie.
Yeah.
And then as that becomes habitual, it becomes automatic.
Exactly.
So that lie-o-matic, whether it sounds like an infomercial or not, is something that just seems to happen automatically. Now, that doesn't just say, oh, well, I'm an addict. I lie. It's what I do. It's tough. Get over it.
No, the thing is, it comes to mind another joke. How do you know an addict is lying?
How?
When his lips are moving.
Ba-dum-tsh.
Yes. I thought you have a sound effect.
I'll have to put a real sound effect
yeah,
in.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, but it's so true because all addicts lie. This addiction, this problem with sexual purity, it thrives in lying and deception and dishonesty.
So why do all addicts lie? How is that? I'd say that's even true of all addictions, probably. But why?
Well, I don't know. I've never really figured it out myself.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a problem because you're the expert.
Yeah. No, I'm not. So anyway, well, you know, to protect themselves, to protect, obviously, they've come to a point where they do have some realization that what they're doing is wrong. And if they come clean, if they're honest about whatever it is, they're going to get a lot of negative feedback. And you know what? I don't want to hear it. Mm-hmm. I don't want to hear it from, this is obviously in the past, not today. I don't want to hear it from my wife. I don't want to hear it from my boss. I don't want to hear it from coworkers, whatever it is. So I'm going to lie. Mm-hmm. I'm going to lie about whatever it is. I'm going to lie till you die. That used to be my motto, lie to you till you die.
I hear you.
And so, because I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to hear it. I want to satisfy. I want to do whatever I can. And here's the reality. You know why addicts act out? It's because they want to medicate their anxiety and stress. We live with so much anxiety and stress in our lives that in order for us to feel normal, which means without so much anxiety and stress, mm-hmm. like a normal level, we act out. And so I want my medication, but I don't want anybody else to, you know, to know about it. So I'm going to keep it secret. I'm going to keep it quiet, and I'm going to keep doing it until I get caught or I die.
So it just seems like it's a way of not ruffling feathers, so to speak.
That's
it seems
right.
like the easier option.
Well, think about it, especially in our case with, you know, sexual purity problems. If a person has an affair outside of marriage, there's a high probability that marriage is not going to end well.
And so it seems a lot easier to not say anything than to admit to that.
Exactly.
And then have to go through a divorce.
The biggest problem is, and this is even in relapses, and unfortunately I've heard of a few relapses, and it's kind of one of those things where it took them weeks or months to admit, three come offhand really quick recently. It's basically, once they did it one time, they kept it secret. And then that just built up the shame and the guilt again. And in order for them to medicate the shame and the guilt, they had to keep acting out. And so it's an endless cycle. Once you relapse and you are not honest about the behaviors, about your slip, about your relapse, you will continue down the scale until you're back to where you were when you hit rock bottom.
So when I start to assume other people's negative reactions to what I've done, the lie is the only way to wall that up.
That's right. And assume is a really, really good term for this. Hmm. You know what assume is, right?
I do know what assume is and what it means. But okay. Now we'd have to put the explicit lyrics thing on.
No, it can't be that. It's a mule. I'm talking about a mule.
Oh, we're talking about the
dog. Makes a mule out of you and me.
Right, absolutely. Yes.
So anyway... So anyway, yeah, when we assume that, okay, let's say I slip up and I choose to view pornography and I have a choice. Okay, I acted out. What am I going to do? Am I going to keep it secret or am I going to tell my wife or tell my accountability partners, tell my sponsor? Well, that's your choice. It's this or that. Keep it secret or confess. Now, if I keep it secret, I'm just going to feel guilty about it. I'm going to feel bad about it.
And you promised to fix it on your own.
Oh, yeah, of course. Oh, I can fix this. And it's just going to continue to spiral out of control until, guess what? Now I'm looking up prostitutes. Now I'm going to meet a massage therapist. Now I'm acting out sexually outside the marriage again. Holy cow. What happened? I could have stopped this after the first slip. Mm-hmm. You know, I know guys that, thank goodness, they got caught again with just emailing an ex-affair partner.
And that was true of me. Story you're telling.
Oh, wow. I wasn't even thinking about you, but that's right. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And you know, that's a fortunate thing is when you're relapsing back in and you're trying to keep it secret and you're trying to control it on your own, to be found out early is a good thing.
That is so true that... a better thing is for us to confess. I remember I relapsed back in 2011. It was second and third of October. And it was bad. And I had a choice. I could either keep it secret and that was the end of my recovery. If I kept the secret, I was done.
Right.
I could fake it, and whatever, but I would not find that healing that I so sought after. Or I could confess and deal with the consequences.
Absolutely.
And thankfully, I kept a secret to this day. No. I confessed. It happened on a Sunday. The big one happened on the Sunday night. And I confessed on Monday, then Tuesday to my sponsor and my therapist. And then by Wednesday, I confessed to my wife. And it was like the worst thing ever. And I don't ever, ever recommend anyone try out a relapse. It's not fun. It's not pretty. I'm telling you, once you're in recovery and the Lord has removed the denial, relapses, porn, masturbation, it's just not the same like it used to be.
And I think that's an interesting point. Like if you really think about in addiction or in a relapse or a slip or where that honesty can play a factor is the first time you even start to have that thought, to be honest with yourself about that thought. Did I just think about so-and-so, or did I look at that girl a second time? And to be honest about that. And for me, I know in my addiction, I was never honest with myself.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's the only way I could really live with myself, was to compartmentalize it and do the whole Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde thing and just pretend like, you know, Mr. Hyde didn't exist.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, some things in our acting out were so bad that the only way to deal with them was to compartmentalize them. To say, push it off to the side and say, well, you know, I'm not going to think about that anymore. I'm going to think about this other thing. But here's the thing. In order for me not to think about the thing I just did that I didn't like that was terrible, I got to do more of the other stuff.
Because it's got to wall it up.
Exactly. You got to wall it up.
And I, you know, I pointed out earlier that the devil really is the father of lies. And the Bible points out in John 8 that that's his native tongue. But what I found really interesting in doing some study was in 1 Timothy 4, in verse 2, it talks about hypocritical liars whose consciences have been seared like having a hot iron. And I know for me personally, that's what lying did to me. It just continued to burn and to sear my conscience.
Absolutely.
Do you find that to be true of addiction and people in addiction?
The searing part, yes. I mean, when I grill chicken, sometimes I reach down and sear my hand.
Right.
No. Yeah. It that's a really good way to say seared. I mean, it is like inside of you seared. It is not just floating around loose.
Right.
It is a part of who you are now. And that's a really, really kind of a alarm should be going off if you're for those, I guess if you're listening to this, you're probably the liar in the relationship, but maybe a wife is listening or a fiance. It's like, oh, my boyfriend, husband, fiance lies all the time. I mean, that alarm should be going off because when it's that deep inside of us that it's second nature for us to lie, it's been seared inside of our conscience. I mean, that's who we are. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's other things that are coming.
Like if you're lying about small things, there's a strong chance, I'd say almost 100%, that there's lying about big things.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, for a wife, for a spouse, that really starts to see, well, wait, why did you say you were at the grocery store when you were, you know, at another store? It may not even have been a part of addiction.
Yeah.
But yet, if there are spouses that are out there that are hearing these kind of things, they need to really put up those alarms and that signal for it. Because I know that lying for addicts, like we said, it's just second nature.
It's just start of the beans.
Right.
Yes.
It's just what you do. But it's what's known as the crazy maker in relationships. And I know that there's a term called gaslighting that's used with those that are in relationships. Do you want to kind of speak to what that is and how that's used by addicts?
Is that when I'm almost on empty and the gaslight comes on?
And the gaslight comes on.
No? Yeah, no. Oh, I have a diesel truck, so I don't know.
So that happens all the time.
Yeah. No, it's basically when we try to make our wives think they're stupid. Mm. I mean, I hate to say it so bluntly, but when I purposely change things around or say, oh, no, that's not what I
you're
said.
You're remembering it
you
wrong.
You're remembering it wrong.
Right.
You're crazy. You have, you know, something wrong with your head. That's gaslighting. When we make them feel that, wait a second, maybe I do have something wrong and he's actually telling the truth. And that's terrible.
Anything that can put a smoke screen up, anything that can kind of diversion, that's gaslighting.
Apparently, it's the term is named after a movie back in a long time ago.
Yeah, and I think in the movie, the premise of the movie was basically every day or every over a certain amount of time, he would dim the lights a little bit more and a little bit more. And his wife would say, "Isn't it a little darker in here?" And he'd be like, "No, you're crazy." And so eventually he made her have her own mental breakdown just by his own lies.
That is one sick dude.
But
guess what? So are we.
Yeah.
And we doing the stuff we did to our wives through our infidelity, through pornography, through masturbation. Yeah, we're just as bad.
And I think that's why it's aptly termed the crazy maker, because it does do that. And I know for my wife and other wives that I've heard of, the addiction, the affairs, the pornography, that hurts. But the lying cuts the deepest when they know that how much we had to lie to keep up the addiction.
Oh, yeah.
And I think I know for me, it chipped away at my own self-worth that I just assumed, well, this is just as good as I can get. And unfortunately, it's just not that good because I'm a liar.
This is who I am.
Right.
This is who I am. This is how I will always be. And I'm never going to change. This is just it.
And so I know for me, I kind of hit this period of depression where it was just like, this is who I am and it sucks. But
was this like in recovery or?
No, before recovery. Oh, so all those lies and just constantly having to make up stories and, and why are you on your phone and why are you doing this? Just the constant lying that took place. Just, I think it took care of my self-worth to where I didn't have any.
Yeah.
And that's a dangerous place to be. And I've heard from other guys as well that you really lose respect with who you are in yourself. And so then that's when you start to try to even more so become Mr. Hyde.
Exactly. And that's exactly what I was about to say, is that the more I lied about who I was to those closest to me, the more I needed to medicate the pain, to medicate the guilt and the shame associated with that. And the more denial built up in my life. I mean, one of the worst things for me is that while I was acting out, even before I was married, being part of the Houston adult entertainment industry, if you will, all the sexual acting out that I did was like the best thing ever. And so it was always what I imagined. It was always like what I saw in pornography. It was always for me. And it was like so awesome that it kept me living in that big chunk of denial. A lot of guys, what happens, they go have a really bad experience with a woman, with a prostitute, with a massage parlor girl, whatever it is. And then they feel that guilt and shame. Unfortunately for me, because everything was like the best, I never got to a point of feeling that guilt and shame until I got busted and broke free of the lies, broke free of the denial, and said, you know, holy cow, this is my life. This, you know, you mentioned in a previous podcast being the hero walking away unscathed from all the bombs and all the...
Oh, yeah, going off behind you.
Yeah, right? Exactly, going off behind me. Well, yeah, that was me until the bomb hit. Right in front of me.
And so for me, and again, that's where it kind of hit me, and I had to turn to a secondary addiction. So now the lying had eroded my soul enough to where I couldn't really go on functioning that way. So now I need a little more alcohol in my life. I think I've read somewhere that about 80% of sex addicts develop a secondary addiction. And I believe it's because of what you're speaking of. That shame is so hard to carry that, well, I can medicate it sexually, but that's not enough. I also have to medicate it some other way, gambling or whatever that would be.
Yeah.
So how does one go from being engulfed and completely encapsulated with, you know, lying and just trapped and basically in chains? I mean, that's how I envisionalize myself before recovery, was just someone wrapped up in chains. How can I move from that to any type of freedom? How can I learn to tell the truth if it's just a part of my DNA?
Well, that's the first part of it is, like you said, how can I learn to tell the truth? Well, learn to tell the truth slowly. You know, do it in a safe place. Do it somewhere that you're not going to get that negative feedback junk that you got when you were a kid. For me, it's always at Castamonia meetings or SAA meetings or even AA meetings, going to speak the truth and not get that feedback. And that's, you know, that's one of the reasons we don't have crosstalk in Castamonia, is because a lot of guys come in there and they're speaking the truth for the first time. And the last thing you want is for some guy to say, oh, you're sick, or what's wrong with you, or why do you do this?
Put any type of judgment on
exactly. it. And this is not to say that, you know, this is, hopefully this isn't taken negatively towards wives. Wives have every right to ask those questions, to be pissed. Did I say pissed?
You did.
Okay. Yeah. To get ticked off.
Absolutely.
To be angry, to all this stuff. But the first part about becoming honest is learning to become honest and doing it in a safe place, typically with a therapist, in a 12-step group that doesn't have feedback, somewhere where you feel safe. Even a trusted accountability partner that may understand this. Now, one thing that I found is that when I am in a room with men who struggle with the same thing I do, who have admitted to fighting for sexual purity or struggling with sexual purity, whatever it is, it's a lot easier for me to be honest with them about my sexual purity struggles than it is with a general accountability guy that doesn't, maybe struggles with right. financial issues.
And you don't want to reinforce that ability of lying to say, exactly. well, now I can't be fully honest exactly. with this accountability partner because he'll judge me.
Exactly.
And it's interesting that you mentioned AA. They have a great saying that nothing changes if nothing changes.
That's right.
And it sounds real simple, but it's just the idea that of even going back to past podcasts that we've had, talk about insanity. If we're going to do the same thing and expect a different result, it's its own version of a crazy maker.
That's right.
And so we really have to choose, you know what? I want change in my life. And so something has to change.
That's right. And I have to be honest. I have to be honest with myself about what I'm doing, and I have to be honest with somebody else, even if it's just one person. I mean, that starts the boulder rolling downhill, the downhill of honesty.
And I think then you can start to see the benefit of being honest and the yeah. freedom that it feels like. I know the first time that I was honest on was my discovery day. And I had basically an accountability partner that I lied to for a long time. And he said, do you even know how to tell the truth? And I was like, I don't know. And he said, well, I'm too mad to talk to you right now, but you need to find someone that you can tell everything to.
Yeah.
And I did. And it was an amazing experience for the first time to realize I can let that all out of my heart,
mm-hmm.
As ugly as it was, and then realize that there is no condemnation.
That's right.
One of the sayings that sticks out to me right now is that there's no addiction without lying. So we've talked about that lying is yeah. just a part of addiction. But there's also no recovery without truth.
Absolutely.
And so when I keep that foremost in my mind, I know it helps my recovery to be stronger.
You know,
so
one of the things that I preach to guys, whether they're my sponsees or just in the group in general, is honesty over sobriety.
That honesty over
if
sobriety.
If you're not honest, then you're not sober. I don't care if you haven't acted out sexually in 6 months, but if you're still lying about everything, then to me, you're not sober.
It's going back to that white knuckle.
And it's going back to white knuckling the issue. You're not living in freedom. You just got the chain a little longer than it used to be. Mm-hmm. And so honesty over sobriety is so big that if somebody can be honest, if they are honest with me about their problems, I still love them anyway, whether they're acting out or not, as long as they're being honest. And that's extremely important, because what I've found is that the more a guy is honest about his life, about his struggles, about a relapse, about a slip, whatever it is, the healthier he becomes. Hmm. Yeah, the consequences may stink.
I mean, absolutely.
They may be horrible, but honesty is more important. This is going back to what I spoke about earlier, about my relapse in October 2011, when I finally had to come clean. I was either going to lie until, you know,
the grave,
lie till I die, or I was going to be honest with my wife. And I knew that the biggest thing was the Lord telling me, not audibly because I'm not crazy, but just in my spirit, it was like, do you trust me? I've brought you this far, George. Do you trust me? Will you be honest about this? And then I finally had, yes, I'm going to trust you, Lord, and I'm going to suffer the consequences, in-house separation, just tremendous sadness and crying and everything. It was just, it was horrible. I never, ever want to repeat that again. But that was a thing. Do I trust Jesus enough to tell the truth? I can tell you this. I don't trust humans enough to tell the truth always. Well, nowadays I do. Long story. But anyway, but I do trust Jesus. I do trust God enough to be truthful.
So it's using that higher power to know that that power will get me through this.
That's right.
And that honesty is more important.
It doesn't matter. I may lose my marriage. I may lose the ministry. I may lose whatever it is. But as long as I'm honest, I can keep living and serving the Lord. If I'm not honest, it's over anyway.
And I've mentioned before that it was I had to come to a point to where I realized I could keep my wife with lies, and I could try to always know that she only stayed around because she didn't know everything.
That's right.
Or I could live free in knowing that she made the choice that she needed to make, but at least I'm living honest. And
when my wife says, I love you, to me, not to you, to me.
Right, to you.
She better not say to you. She's not saying to you. Anyway, when my wife says, I love you, she's saying it because she knows all of me. And that is awesome.
There's actually meaning in that.
There's actually meaning in that. I basically say, I love you broken and all. I love not only 50% of George, I love 100% of George.
Because I used to truly feel that when my wife told me I love you, that she was saying, I love you for the person that I know.
Exactly.
But now I know the same thing. That when she says it, she means even all the junk.
You know, the reason I had such a emotional connection to my last affair partner was because she knew pretty much all of me. She knew about the sexual abuse. She knew about all the pornography. She knew about the adult entertainment in Houston. And she knew that, you know, what I did for a living and my family and all that stuff. So that created that emotional connection. Now, she didn't know 100% of me. She knew probably about 75% of me. My wife knows 100% of me. And that is amazing that she still chooses to say, I love you, even though all the crap that I've done to her, and even the character defects, the anger, the impatience, all this stuff, she can look at me and say, I love you. She may be ticked off at me for being angry at the kids or raising my voice, but she still loves me for who I am. And that's a very freeing thing. And that allows me to continue to practice rigorous honesty with her.
And I think those are great points. And that's what I think of when I think of an authentic relationship. And I realized that before recovery, I didn't have those. Mm-hmm. I was kind of an actor. With this group of people, I acted a certain way. With this group of people, I acted a certain way. With my wife and family, I acted a certain way at church. But I knew how I should be in these different settings. And I felt justified, like that was a good quality of mine. But I had no authentic relationship because no one really knew the real me. But that authentic relationship is freeing when people know your weaknesses and they know your fears and you know that they're going to accept you anyway.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. When we're telling the truth, we don't ever have to defend it. It defends itself. And that's a really, really important thing that if I'm honest, then I don't have to worry about somebody else coming back and saying something. It's like, oh, he didn't say it. It's the truth.
The truth stands alone, right?
And it may not be, the consequences may not be fun or exciting or great, but it's still the truth. And I never, ever have to defend it. It defends itself.
Right.
I think there's a quote by St. Augustine, isn't there?
Well, there's at least one that I found that's attributed to St. Augustine. But you know how quotes are. It could be attributed to Martin Luther King Jr. It could be attributed to St. Augustine.
Well, Abraham Lincoln was quoted saying, don't believe everything you read on the internet.
Really?
Yes.
So he was a man real well before his time. But St. Augustine, like you said, there's a quote attributed to him that says, the truth is like a lion. You don't have to defend it. Just let it loose. It can defend itself.
That's right. That's right. And that's the guy that the grass, St. Augustine grass.
Right, named after him.
Yes.
Because he had loose lions everywhere.
Oh, wonderful.
So, yeah, letting that truth just be loose, because that's what it is. You don't have to hide it. You don't have to think about, okay, who knows this aspect of it? Because I know with me and my addiction, I had multiple affair partners by the end that It was like spinning plates in the circus.
Yeah.
And so, well, what lie did I tell to whom? And who knew this? And if I was living a life of truth, man, how much easier would that be? Oh, how much energy would I have back in my life?
I remember trying to think about all the lies that I had to keep telling in order to cover up the lie I had already told with my wife and even with girlfriends in the past. There was one point in my life that this was, I was dating five different women here in Houston, and then in another city I had, there was two. And it was kind of like, dude, how do you manage it? Well, and I remember one time I got busted because I was out with a girl here in Houston and my phone got fried. I connected the wrong charger or something. This is back in 2003, maybe. And so in order for our friends to meet us at the club in Houston, I had to leave a voicemail on my phone saying, hey, this, instead of saying, hey, this is George, I'll call you back. It's like, hey, this is so-and-so, meet me and this girl at the club. And what happened, one of the other girls happened to call me that night, and she heard that message that I was with another girl, and it's like, oh, crap, my lies.
The lies.
My web of lies. Just.
And that's what happens. And just the energy and deception that's lost. I think of an example of a friend of mine that I know that he was telling me that in his addiction, lying was a part of just who he was. And there was a problem that had come up with some documents with their taxes. And there was going to be some court hearings that were coming up. And he didn't want his wife to know. So she would ask him. He'd be like, no, it's fine. It's no big deal.
Yeah.
Well, he lived in downtown Houston and worked on the outskirts of town with anybody that knows Houston traffic or any big city. That was about a 40-minute drive back to his house.
At least.
So every day he was worried that the mail would come with a court-ordered document. He would leave his downtown office, drive home, check the mail, and then drive back to his office to finish his day. So he would spend 40 minutes coming to his house, check the mail, 40 minutes back to the office, then coming home. All that energy, all that time wasted just because he couldn't say, hey, you know what? I'm having a real hard time with this, and we're in some court issues now. And yeah, that's a hard conversation.
Absolutely.
But how much easier than the energy lost in those lies?
Yeah, absolutely.
I also really think about like resolution. I was a music guy in a former life. And basically, when you think of how music resolves itself and then just that finality of what the chord structure sounds like towards the end of music, lies and truth work that way, that the only way to truly resolve something is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I think our society knows that even in its core. It's like a part of our society. Courts look for truth. We, in mathematics, we're solving for the truth. We want to know the truth.
Well, that's why we, in terms of sexual purity, sex addiction recovery, we take a polygraph.
Take a polygraph.
Our wives, our therapists, even me, I'm practicing so much rigorous honesty that I want to take the polygraph just to say that, yes, I'm telling you.
No, you just said you want to take the polygraph.
I know, like I said before, and maybe it was this podcast or an earlier podcast. Oh, it was an earlier podcast on step one. I'm a masochist or a sadist or whatever. I love it. No. What it does, it's like peeing in a cup for a drug user. Can I say pee in a cup? Pee in a cup for a drug user. But it's our version of it. I'm practicing rigorous honesty because really the only way to defeat this disease is to practice rigorous honesty. Am I being rigorous honest with my therapist, with my wife, with my accountability partners, with other men in the group, that kind of level of honesty.
Right. And I think that's a great way to say it. I mean, it is. It's our version of peeing in the cup. I know that when I was doing some celebrate recovery, I was in a group with a drug addict, and he was injured at work, and he was in recovery and had been in recovery for a while. And the first thing that happens when you're injured at work is they make you take a drug test. And he said, for the first time in my life, I was like, yeah, bring it on. Cause he knew he was clean and he knew.
Oh, yeah.
And that's something that I know for me, the polygraph is like, yes, give me something I can stand on.
Yeah.
That shows that I'm living the way that I say I'm living. So it is something I look forward to, but I'll tell you the very first time my therapist told me, the end game is that you're going to take a polygraph test. I was whoa.
It's like the electric chair.
Yeah, it seems like it. It looks like it, too.
It's like
And when we're talking to Stephen Kabler in a couple podcasts, we'll kind of hear a little more about that. But again, just seeing the power that lies can have over us and the decay that it can bring us, that it doesn't, you know, answer anything. Lies only confuse. They smokescreen. Right. But then the truth can give us an answer. The truth can bring clarity, and the truth can bring a conclusion to something. And I just think that's a powerful message that I wish somebody had told me when I was 18.
Well, it's unfortunately, there's not a lot of truth being spoken. You know, you look at media and Hollywood, not this podcast, but other media.
We are not in Hollywood.
Yes. And you look at the lies that they're living, not the lives, but the lies that they're living. And that's their lifestyle. Their lifestyle is, you know, the fakeness, even in today's society with social media and promoting yourself like the best part of yourself instead of, you know, you with that, well, not you, but like a woman without makeup and rollers in her hair, just looking like crap at 4 a.m. because her baby woke up. I mean, that kind of stuff you rarely see on social media. You always see all the fun stuff, all the pretty pictures, all the pretty people.
Yeah, I've heard it said that Facebook is like your highlight reel, but you don't show anybody your blooper reel.
Well, my blooper reel is somewhere in the Casamonia book. One of those stories in the
it's
back.
One of those stories. Yeah. And that's a great part of step one, too. You know, going back to that conversation of just being real and being able to show our bloopers, so to speak.
Yeah.
And I think that really shows us the power that truth can have. And I know there's added health benefits, and we could go into even that. But I'm sure the average listener is well aware that knowing when they lie, what it feels like in their spirit, what it feels like in their heart, and then the difference they have when they're able to tell the truth. I know for me, when I can toss my phone in the back seat to one of my kids, and I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that it's 100% above board what that feels like. And I know the other difference of trying to explain away things and what that feels like.
I have a 2-year-old, and she loves watching birthday videos. And this is my other daughter's and even her own birthday video. And she'll say, birthday, birthday. And she'll grab my phone, birthday, birthday. And I just give her my phone. And I don't have to worry about something, a bad text coming through. I don't have to worry about a porn picture or a porn video on my phone or an affair partner or anything like that texting me. I mean, it's really, really freeing.
Yeah. And I think that is the joy of the truth.
You know, it's funny, though, because on the way back from Colorado, my wife has to use the phone. And for a split second, I was like, wait, oh, yeah, here.
It is still a part of the nature.
It's still part of the nature.
My wife and I talk about.
And I need it. And I'm slowly practicing to just let it go.
All right.
Yeah.
And there's so many practices of inappropriate ways that I've used the phone that, you know, coming up with other ways to do that, like leaving it out on the counter instead of in my pocket
and
some of those things. But, you know, breaking free of that. But and then just realizing the freedom in that, just how much it opens your heart to other things when you don't have to spend the energy of trying to hide it all.
Yep.
You have any final thoughts on lies and truth and kind of the
You know, the sooner a guy becomes honest, the sooner a guy starts to chip away at the lies, the sooner that the Lord will work in their life to make them healthier, to make them better, and the better and the faster the rewards will come to them. And these aren't always, you know, great rewards, but at the end, when, you know, we go see him, he can say, well done, good and faithful servant,
Amen.
Because we were honest and we were able to say, hey, this is who I am. And my sponsor, when he came clean, he lost his wife.
Hmm.
You know, he had to raise 2 kids. She left him with both kids. And she had to raise him. He had to raise both his son and daughter by himself. I mean, that was the price of his honesty. But he's in recovery, sober for 20 years plus.
Which is the true victory.
Well, great sponsor. And not only that, but the relationship, the way he acts with other people, the way he communicates. It's just, man, I wish everybody were like this, you know? It's like, wow. And one day I hope to keep working my recovery so that I too can react like that in a calm nature and not so volatile sometimes that I am. It's like Incredible Hulk, you know. I'm wearing green for a reason.
Yeah, so it's your Incredible Hulk.
Hulk smash.
So stay Bruce Banner as much as you possibly.
Yes. Or Dr. Jekyll.
Yeah, there you go. Well, again, if you're out there and you're listening to this and you can relate to it and you're just seeking some help or you have some feedback for us, feel free to email us at puritypodcast@castimonia.org. The website is castimonia.org, is castimonia. And it's just a great resource where you can subscribe there and get some information, find some help, and then hopefully start to turn those lies into truths and seeing the power in that in your own life. Again, next podcast is going to be a special podcast where we're going to be talking with Stephen Kabler. We'll be talking with him about the polygraph and how it can lead to healing. And so, again, just really cementing in that fact that truth can lead us down the path of healing. So thank you, George.
Thank you, Doug.
And I hope everyone has a great week. And remember that you are not walking this road alone.